issue at home that might impact their, you know, their really their ability to work well for the city. Do you have an open door policy like that, and do the employees know that?
I think it's informal. I don't really shut my doors unless I have some kind of pressing matter. But
okay.
We tend to try to have a chain of command. It doesn't. I would just be a psychiatrist if every employee came to me and, you know, complain about work stuff.
Well,
but there is a process that if you don't like the supervisor's decisions, you go to the department head. You know, you can appeal to the city manager. But
okay.
Yes, that's.
Having been a boss once or twice in my life, I would have to kind of say that it's not the greatest thing for an employee to hear that that their boss says, well, you know, if I did that, I'd be being a psychologist. That's part of being a large organization manager, especially in a community like ours where you never know what went on last night and how it's going to impact people the next day. Okay, I mean, and it's, so does the have you directed the HR department to maintain an open door policy? Do all employees for the city of Bethel have the ability to go to Mr. Harris, who's your direct report? And we're not talking about his job performance. We're just asking you: have you directed him that yes, any employee may come to you about any matter that they think is in the purview of HR. Again, maybe it's looking for a psychiatrist without fear of any sort of retaliation, negative comment, being told by their supervisor, you know, you shouldn't be going to HR. Are there any constraints on employees of the city of Bethel to take advantage of the services that the HR department offers in their very broad scope?
I haven't issued any policy against or for that, with the assumption that that's usually how HR is. So as I came on board, I assumed that was already possible.
So I guess that if you had heard from an employee that I tried to go to HR and my supervisor got on my case about it, I would take it you would be a little bit upset.
Yes,
okay.
I've not heard that.
All right, very good. And just one more question, Mr. Mayor. I know you take this ICS and EOC seriously, and you know, God help us if it really ever does come down to being 24/7 in here. But do you consider the EOC, the ICS organization, to be nearly a paramilitary type organization? As far as chain of command and things are concerned?
Well, I don't understand the question. FEMA developed this, and it did come from, I believe, the years of experience that America has in winning its wars.
Well, I'll debate you that. It came from CAL FIRE. ICS came from CAL FIRE. That's where it came from. It's not based on military organization, really. It's based on things that had worked back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s on real big project fires and things where you suddenly had to manage anywhere from a few hundred to several thousand people, and they said, you know, they laid it out. So
no, I don't think it's a paramilitary.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mrs. Springer. I would like to give an opportunity for every council member to ask Mr. Carrazza questions and or make comments to him. So I'll open it up to any other council members or maybe ask some further questions on Mr. Springer's comments. Ms. Leary.
So in regards to, we were talking about the fact that you need a take-home vehicle in order to be able to respond to EOC needs in the middle of the night. What would that look like? What would Bethel's EOC do in response to COVID after hours in the middle of the night? I do not know the answer to that.
Well, we would convene all the chiefs, and then we'd assess. And I think this was experienced on June 6th when we had the first case of COVID. The next day it was activated level 3, but we have to be able to come together. The EOC structure has to be physical presence. So we got, you know, social distance spots, locations for each of the chiefs would come in, and we'd say, well, what's going on? What's the information? What do you see? And then we have to develop a plan to address that. The first day, I think it was the fear that all of a sudden Winter House closed down. The fear was that was the vector. We had to get people together and try to figure out if that was the case, make contacts with Winter House, try to make contacts with YKC, try to get the information. And then, okay, if that was, then what would we do? Well, how would we respond? So that's pretty much how we did it. You can't wait till, the clock isn't, I don't punch into the wrong morning, so I'm not going to respond. I think the nature of itself, Emergency Operations Center, the E part, does dictate an immediate response.
Okay. I guess I still just don't, I don't understand, like, what outcomes the EOC could have, like, what actual, like, action items would come from having EOC convene in the middle of the night. Well, in regards to COVID, right? We're not talking about if there was a flood, different situation. If there was, we don't have tornadoes here. What else do we have here? Earthquake. Let's say we had the earthquake that our buildings are all prepared for, that we don't get up here. That is a different situation. I understand. We would need our Bethel Public Works probably, and who knows, our maintenance folks to come in, because there might be, like, physical damage to structures or roads or things like that. But I just don't understand what the Bethel EOC would do. What outcome would there be? And I'm questioning that because you said that tonight, that was why you need a take-home vehicle to respond in an EOC capacity. And I'm having trouble with what that means other than having a meeting. And really, in that first meeting, was a lot of spinning your wheels, right? Because none of that was factual on what, when you had the first activate EOC and there was all that concern about Winter House, that none of that was not at all factual in what was going on. So that is my concern. I understand if you don't have an answer for that, because I just don't see what.
Yeah, I think you're probably thinking like emergency, like a fire chief or a police chief. They gotta respond, and then that's the appropriate use of that. As an EOC director, it's because COVID it dragged on longer than what we anticipated. You never know what happens the next day. Sometimes we get announcements from YKAC, so we get a COVID related, and then it's like it's real hard to call people and say, hey, what do you think of this? Sometimes we had to activate it for 1 hour. Everybody convened. What do you know? Is it in the community? Do we need to react? And then we find out if maybe not.
But so what if it is in the community? What is the Bethel EOC going to do when I'm anticipating it any time, when there's an announcement of, like, Community Spread or something? Like, what?
Yeah, the plan was we would run the EOC level 3, basically, full time, and shut down the city. If it's convenient, right? We go back to what we had in March and April, where you only have police, fire, and water. And water, and that's it. Everybody else, don't self-quarantine yourself, don't interact with people. We gotta stop the spread of it.
Okay. I think we're just not explaining it right. I've tried to ask you about this before, and never really got
thank you, Ms. Leary. Ms. DeWitt?
Yeah, so I just have a question, a clarification. With the positions for the EOC, I noticed that the emergency ops director position is posted at $142,000 in the budget, which doesn't reconcile with the contract. So I was just wondering if you could explain how you manage that, those two different salary arrangements.
So I think in the budget, for the city budget, there was a 3% increase to allow for any kind of good performance evaluation, which again, I think that it's not going to happen, but the city council approved that. So in the contract negotiation as a city manager, it could be the 3%. I took that number and divided it, did some hourly numbers, accounted for benefits and whatnot, and it came up to be that EOC number. I'm not getting paid. I think what people are confused is the EOC director and everyone, all those temporary positions are if I pull myself or I found somebody who was capable of doing those positions, and those salary numbers could be, you know, up to, but it allows for almost like a replacement of the permanent positions. If they're attractive enough, we don't know. Maybe we need to increase the information intelligence officer from 60 to 9. Nobody's filled those positions. So chances are we may go at the end of the year with the personnel for EOC with zero.
Okay, so just to make sure that I'm totally understanding, I think I follow you. You know, there's a rate of pay there and there's a salary there with the idea that that would match your position if it received that 3%. But right now you're operating under the terms of your existing contract with the city.
Right, and then as I'm doing EOC work, the city can get reimbursement from CARES Act with that. So the city's impact, if you're talking about $137,000, which is my salary, the general fund will not pay that fully because CARES Act is reimbursing the time that I spent in the EOC.
Okay, I think that answers my question. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. DeWitt. Further questions on the same topic? I'm waiting for Ms. Strickler to bring something back for me. So, I have an email. This was all brought to our attention as a concern, and rightly so, because you are our employee. When you responded to Ms. Strickler about whether or not, you know, the selection of the hourly rates for the temporary EOC staff, perhaps one of you could explain. I thought I heard Vinny, you say that those are the hourly rates for the people currently filling those seats. And then you responded to Lori and said, yep, it was some voodoo magic I used to figure out budgets. And again, I guess I'm a little concerned about what Ms. Leary is not able to comprehend what you're trying to tell her. Maybe you're not being really clear about what you're trying to say. And what was your contract? How much did we agree to pay you?
$137,000 a year.
And then how much are you making now?
$137,000 a year.
Was there additional money that you are receiving beyond the $137,000?
Not from the EOC, no. My salary is for 40 hours a week. 32 of that I'm doing city manager things. 8 of those hours I'm here at the EOC on Wednesdays doing EOC activities.
So being paid an EOC staff, our staff.
The payroll pays me 40 hours per contract, but the city, because I tag it as EOC business, it could take that 8 hours and ask the CARES Act to reimburse the city's general account with the 8 hours.
At an EOC rate versus your city manager rate?
No, what? At the city manager rate.
At the
city manager rate. If there was let's say you took the position and you got it at the temp emergency operation center rate that's in the budget, then the CARES Act would pay you per hour based on that rate. And I still work 5 days as a city manager doing city manager things. I get paid the same.
There may be some indications that or maybe some, like Haley would use quite often, you know, the optics don't look good. And with some of the numbers that we were able to glean, it'll be interesting to see another interpretation of your salary.
Okay.
So, Mr. Springer.
So I guess the question we asked pretty simple. If we go to Cassell to payroll,
yes.
How many hours are you paid for as city manager out of the city general fund every 2 weeks? 40 hours or 32?
It's 40 hours, and then the calculation is that of the 40 hours, 8 is reimbursable with CARES. Because those 8 hours is, you know, on Wednesday I spend in the ELC.
Okay, but that's in the Excel workbook.
Well, no, that's in the Cassell.
How is Cassell recording anything about the EOC?
Right. So we have a timesheet that tags how many hours that you spend on the EOC. So in Cassell, there's a toggle that says when they do the payroll, this person worked 40 hours. They get paid for 40 hours. Of that, 8 is reimbursable because it's COVID-19.
Yeah. So Cassell is tracked in the same way they would track the public works director, who, as we know from the budget, is apportioned throughout, called water, hauled sewer, road maintenance, public works, city utility, city maintenance, correct? So your timesheet in Cassell is similarly apportioned, 32 hours as city manager and 8 hours as EOC director?
No, it's a portion of 40 hours. So the city's treasury pays me for 40 hours,
right.
And the 8 is sort of tagged so that when you run the report, in 2 weeks, 16 of those hours is reimbursable. So the finance director would just charge the CARES Act for my time, the logistics chief's time, everybody that's in the EOC that's not public safety.
So the finance director, let me see if I get this right now, the finance director will invoice the EOC.
Yes.
You'll enter that invoice into a field in Excel that's tagged and hyperlinked to the invoice from the city.
Right.
And you will then write a check with accompanying detail, this much for the city manager, this much for...
Yes.
And the amount that's being reimbursed by the EOC, by CARES money, to the finance department general fund for your 8 hours is at the effective hourly rate that you make as city manager.
Yes. So, examples, we just did $797,000 worth of reimbursement for public safety. Finance through Cassell ran the numbers of all police and fire personnel from March 1 through June 30th. And it came up to be $797,000. An invoice was created from the finance department, sent to the EOC with that backup documentation. The EOC wrote a check to the city of Bethel for $797,000.
And just again, getting back to auditing, we will be able to prove to the satisfaction of the men or women in suits that come here from Washington, D.C. between now and 2025, that
yes.
Those expenses were, in fact, unexpected and COVID-19 related.
Well, in the budget, we projected $3 million. So this is sort of taken away from that line item. And it is presumed that everybody in police and fire are 100% fighting COVID.
Okay, that's fine. Just one more question. As you know, city emails are public documents.
Yes.
So in a public document, I observed two components. One was you essentially informing a city employee that when we are in the EOC, we will address each other by our titles, and that's kind of why I asked about whether you think the EOC is a you know, paramilitary organization. I mean, it ain't the state troopers. You know, it's not the National Guard. It's everybody know. It's where everybody knows your name.
Sure.
Okay. And that rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. But in that same email, you know, we have been making accommodation for individuals, whether they are school teachers or whether they are villagers, who have a need to shelter here in Bethel for a length of time, where they're waiting for clearance to go to the village. We've been quite accommodating and good for the local economy. So in this particular email, you made the comment that, X has to stay here another day, go out and get them a bottle of water and a sandwich. The word was, we're not feeding them steak and lobster. And you know, I read that, and, you know, Vinny, these are people who are, we have invited them into our home to help out surrounding communities, to help them out. You know, it comes down to respect, you know. That really, really, really rubbed me the wrong way seeing that. I think it was flippant. I think it was uncalled for. I think it shows certainly a poor attitude on your part. It sends a poor message to, the city employees that received that message. And, you know, I think that... what bothers me is that may be indicative of a not uncommon attitude. I just can't imagine that it is not indicative of a not uncommon attitude like that. It was certainly embarrassing to me when I read it. And that's all I've got, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. Mrs. Leary.
Could you speak to any precautions and plans that have been put in place to protect the city staff and operations as we navigate through this pandemic?
Well, since we reopened the city after Memorial Day, there were rules and regulations in place. We had to have social distancing. We had to have mask when interacting with the public, and after the resolution that the council had for mandatory masking, each department had to have a written mask policy pertaining to their particular needs. So that has been in place, and we have in discussion, the next step would be travel policies, discussions on PTOs. Is the city going to pay somebody admin leave if they decide to go to Anchorage for a weekend and come back and they quarantine for 2 weeks? We had discussion with the department heads about that, and each department head has drafted their own travel policy for their departments in writing. For example, the hall utilities. They're not allowing their drivers more than 2 days of a PTO. It's just, you can't leave because we need you so much to drive that, the department head has just said, all right, we'll give you 2 days. That's all we can give you. So each department is developing their own travel policies.
Okay. Yeah, I would expect... I would just expect those to, I guess if we're going to have, how many different departments are there? Seven? Eight?
Eight.
Six, if you're going to have, thanks, John, eight individual travel policies, I would hope that, since you brought up the hall utility drivers, my knowledge of them is that they're alone for the most part, driving around in the vehicle all day, right? But they're not really interacting very much face-to-face with the public. That maybe there'd be some things put in place where they're not congregating before they start their shifts or something like that, to where
we can continue operations, they can continue getting their paycheck, but I would just really urge you to be the leader in this and ensuring that our city will continue operating as we go through this. Because right now a mask policy isn't going to cut it. Even if each individual department has one, first of all, a piece of paper doesn't mean anyone's going to follow it. We just really need to step that up. That's all for now.
Thank you, Ms. Leary. Ms. Franco or Mr. Diamond? Go ahead, Mr. Diamond.
So, Denny, it was alleged Mr. Barr talked about words he heard or his perception that there wasn't adequate mask wearing of employees. Voluntary mask wearing by employees. Is that your perception as well? And what have you done to kind of help develop that culture of voluntary compliance, which is from what is in fact a mandate from the council?
So Councilor Diamond, after the resolution 20-10 passed. We have, I've asked each of the departments to come up with their own mask policies, but ultimately, I can't be the enforcer, the sole enforcer. I need the department heads to enforce their policies. They're at the building's work sites, and they would know what their employees' mask usage would be and expectations. So, do I expect the police officers to wear a mask if they're in the car by themselves? Probably not. They have to break down a door or answer a call immediately. I'm not going to be there to you got to put your mask on before you kick down the door. It's not me, myself, to be able to go around and enforce that. I could tell them, hey, yes, it's what we decided for your department. You submitted this mask policy, and I expect you to carry that out. It is a tough, we have disciplinary measures if, an employee is not wearing a mask when they're talking to members of the public, members of a public complaint, and we find out that, this person just refuses to wear a mask, and, that violated our policy on wearing a mask when interacting with the public. So, they would have the disciplinary measures on that. I've been working on a, incentive program that we'd like to rock. After we opened on Memorial Day, we did give out masks to every employee, and we're very, very highly encouraged to wear them. At that point, we didn't have a mandate. But after the council passed it, we did have a mandate, and I rely on my department heads to, enforce their mask policies.
So part of my question was, and just so you know, I'm fully aware why there will be and should be exceptions to employees wearing masks. And there are some gray areas as well, too. What do you do about guys in the fire department who are living in congregate housing, who for their shift, for their 4 days, are a family, right? So there are some gray areas which I think department heads would have to determine. Or I think validating for a couple of employees both under a truck trying to pull out an axle. There are times where mask wearing isn't appropriate. Or if it's not realistic, it just isn't. And I wear a mask for 8 to